Hi, I'm Eric Crossley, and welcome to Making a Difference, episode 34, Hope for 2021. Thanks for joining us, and we're nearing the end of what has been a difficult 2020 for a lot of people, and that's the reason we have hope for 2021, because we do have some good news in this episode, some things we want to share with everybody. First of all, we'd like to say thanks, as always, to Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Plus, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, and Podcast Addict, which is a new one. Thanks so much for helping us get the word out. And as usual, we have to say hello to our top five countries. A change this week. Number one, of course, the U.S. Two is Canada, as usual. Number three, for the first time, is Mexico, and quite a few listeners from Mexico City. Welcome. Buenas noches. And the UK, number four, and Germany, number five. Now, we'd like to start, first of all, I'd like to say thanks again to Dayron Arias, my producer down in Florida. Difficult times everywhere, and having a tough time down there with his governor, unfortunately, Governor DeSantis of Florida, who has been, to say the least, less than effective in helping the folks down there with their reaction to the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll talk more about that coming up. We did want to start by saying, first of all, some good news is that tonight, as of tonight, and tonight is Monday, and it's November 23rd, just almost 3 weeks after the election and over 2 weeks after President-elect Biden was named and certified, along with Kamala Harris as vice president-elect, that they had won the election on that Saturday, some 16 days ago. Now, today, finally, Donald Trump has given the okay for the GSA people to go ahead and start the transition to the new president. He hasn't admitted that he lost. Trump has not said he lost to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris yet. But he's saying, well, you know what? Things might not end up well. So just in case, we're going to start a little transition. He's still not conceding, but his days are numbered as far as this goes. And all of his fights in every state, everything that's gone to court has been rejected. Now, let's talk. We did talk before in the last episode, the Electoral College vote stays the same for Joe Biden, 306, Donald Trump, 232, the exact reverse of 2016, when President Trump had 306 and Hillary Clinton, 232. But the popular vote in 2020, in the election we just had earlier in November, now the latest popular vote we have shows President-elect Biden with 79,868,348 votes, and former president-to-be Donald Trump with 73,813,126. The total win, Joe Biden won by over 6 million votes, 6,055,222 votes. And now Trump has certified, the Trump White House has certified for GSA to proceed with the transition, even though former president-to-be Trump is saying we're still going to continue to fight, even though there's no fight left to do at all. I wanted to mention a couple more things about, again, the margin, over 6 million votes. Now, Trump lost, remember, he lost the popular vote in 2016, but he won the Electoral College 306 to 232. Like we said last week, he said that was a landslide and he lost by almost 3 million votes. Joe Biden won by over 6 million and had the same Electoral College. So if that was a landslide in 16, then this is a double landslide or a triple landslide or something. Anyway, in 58 days, we'll be done with the worst president in history. I want to also mention again, as we said last time, the votes continue to pile up. We still are getting votes counted. I don't know why it takes so long in some of these states, but nevertheless, We have more Americans voting in the 2020 election than in any election in United States history. Congratulations to the United States, and congratulations to President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. Now, some big news before we get to talking a little bit about some of the bad news, and that's on the coronavirus situation. We did have this come just today. Lots breaking today on Monday the 23rd as we're approaching Thanksgiving. President-elect Joe Biden announced several picks for top jobs in national security and foreign relations. This comes to us from WashingtonPost.com, Felicia Sonmez, John Wagner, and Paulina Ferozzi. I hope I got her name right. Now, the president is expected to name Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary, according to White House sources. The nominations announced Monday are Alejandro Mayorkas to head the Department of Homeland Security, the first immigrant ever in that position in the United States. That's another landmark situation. Avril Haines is Director of National Intelligence, and she's the first woman to ever have that position. And former Secretary of State John Kerry will be the special presidential envoy for climate and climate change. And of course, President Trump said that there wasn't any climate change, so he didn't have any task force for that. Meanwhile, in Michigan, a four-member canvassing board certified the election results, effectively awarding the state's electoral votes to Biden, who defeated Trump by over 155,000 votes. So this election, we're not going to talk a lot more about it because it's over, folks. And we've said right now, over 6 million vote difference. Congratulations to our future President Biden. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the bad news. Let's give the statistics before we go to talking about some good news. First of all, as far as coronavirus goes, it is near the end of November now, and we are unfortunately in a fall situation where the numbers here in the United States and many other places are spiking. Right now, globally, we have lost 256,782 people in the United States to coronavirus. Globally, it's just under 1.4 million. Total number of coronavirus cases now in the United States is 12,246,849. The 14-day change is up 38.2%. So the numbers continue to show some bad things right now as far as overall numbers in many states. We saw the spike in some of those rural states. We're talking about hospital beds in some emergency rooms and intensive care units. In some states, there aren't any hospital beds. This continues to be a huge issue we'll talk about. But right now, we do want to go and have a little bit of the good news because this comes to us from AstraZeneca, from the WashingtonPost.com. AstraZeneca today, on Monday, became the third pharmaceutical company to announce positive results from late-stage trials of a coronavirus vaccine, saying that its candidate, developed by Oxford University, was highly effective. Scientists and politicians alike hailed the third straight week of buoyant scientific news as a sign that even as coronavirus cases surge to devastating levels in many countries, including the United States, an end to the pandemic is in sight. The AstraZeneca candidate was 70% effective on average, with up to 90% effectiveness in a smaller group that got a lower dosage. Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech, and Moderna have reported vaccines that were 95% effective in clinical trials. Different trial designs make direct comparison complicated, but even with somewhat lower protection, the AstraZeneca vaccine may be a more realistic option for much of the world. It's likely to be less expensive and not need to be stored at sub-zero temperatures. Now, let's talk for just one second about that. The effectiveness percentages here, we're talking about different vaccines, and one of the vaccines is going to require two shots, actually one vaccine and then a follow-up in a month to be in the 95% effectiveness range. But one of the things that was interesting that I read today was about our yearly flu shot that we get. I just got one just about a week and a half ago. Our yearly flu shot is only about 60 to 65% effective in a year when the flu shot actually has some strains of the flu that is trying to stop, which is not every year. So, you know, people think, and I was thinking too about, well, 90% and they're talking 70, that doesn't sound very good. The flu shot, when it's at its best, is two-thirds effective, 60 to 65%, meaning that one-third of the people who get the flu shot don't have any effectiveness against the flu, and they might get the flu and die. So that's interesting, and that, I mean, it's not happy news, but that's what happens. And this is really, really amazing news. Again, we have to be positive. That's why we're going to make 2020. We have hope for 2021 now, and we're going to keep the positive news coming. And a little more on that, Peter Plott, director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, who was instrumental in the battle against AIDS, said the positive results from three vaccine candidates cannot be overestimated. And that's the good news. We will leave it at that as far as the talking about that particular aspect of it, because we're coming out with good news now. We've got vaccines that are going to work. We have to get through the winter. We have to use common sense, and we have to let people, make people realize that this is not about getting together for Thanksgiving. And, you know, this is a, oh, it's been, you know, since March, you know, it's been 8 months, 9 months now. We haven't seen family. You know, we have to think about common sense, and a lot of the people in this country are not thinking common sense right now and thinking, well, let's just go to a big party. At the White House, unfortunately, they're going to have big get-togethers for Thanksgiving, and that's not suggested at all, but nevertheless, they're doing it. So we have to keep that in mind, and we have to stay on top of this until the vaccines are completely, fully developed. When will the general public get them? We're probably thinking right now, from what we've heard in the last few days, somewhere around spring into summer of 2021. Now, we also wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in every state. And this comes to us actually, again, from NBCNews.com. As COVID cases soar, GOP state lawmakers keep fighting to limit governors' power to respond. Experts say the limits conservative state lawmakers want on governors' emergency powers would hamper the anti-COVID fight. In Wisconsin, they already have. Coronavirus cases have surged to their highest levels yet, but conservative state legislators across the United States are fighting to limit governors' ability to impose public health restrictions and have succeeded in two states with rising caseloads in the heaviest hit region of the country. In public health emergencies, governors have broad powers to impose quarantines and other actions to stop the spread of disease. As emergency orders have stretched on for months, state lawmakers around the country have objected to what they say is governors' unprecedented use of power for such an extended period of time. Okay, let's talk for a second about that. What does that mean? Back in the old days, back early in 2020, when we were talking at first about COVID-19, and President Trump was telling us how actually COVID-19, you know, it's going to just disappear. It's going to go away and it's not going to be an issue. And, you know, 11 people had it and they're going to be, it's going to be gone when it gets hot in April. Remember that one too? Now we have a situation where here we are at the end of 2020. This president has pretty much thrown in the towel. He's not doing anything right now except going on Twitter and trying to talk about how the election was thrown and how the Republicans are even abandoning him now. But he's not doing anything to stop coronavirus. These governors in these states, these red states, these Republican governors have taken it upon themselves, along with everybody else in South Dakota and Wyoming and all these crazy places, that wearing a mask forcing somebody to wear a mask to prevent them from infecting somebody else with a disease or getting a disease themselves, forcing somebody to do that is undemocratic, and we can't let that happen. And that's what Donald Trump represented. That's what he was representing, the people who don't want to wear masks. That's scary as hell, because those people are out there. They're even in my state, Maryland. You know, we had 66% went for Biden here, but we still have crazy people here, too, people. So, you know, the problem is we have 50 different states. We have all these different governments. We have the District of Columbia also, who did vote for president. But all these different governors, the mayor of D.C., and everybody has a different policy. We have to get our act together, and we'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to Making a Difference. Eric Crossley with episode 34, Hope for 2021. Now, we were talking about social media before, and we were talking about what's been going on in 2020 in this election in 2016. But now we're seeing some of the positive signs from social media. Now, this comes to us actually via NBCNews.com and via RawStory.com. And this is going to be a little bit from Michael Gerson. We'll talk a little bit about that before. But thanks to social media, we're watching the veil fall from their eyes in real time. I find it fascinating because it's just so rare to see anyone in politics ever change their minds, much less people whose careers have been built around not doing so. Take, for example, this incredible Twitter thread from Michael Gerson, a conservative evangelical Christian, former Heritage Foundation fellow and speechwriter and foreign policy advisor to George W. Bush. He now writes opinion pieces for the Washington Post and has been appalled by Trump from the beginning. But until recently, Gerson has resisted the idea that the Republican Party itself is corrupt. On Sunday, he tweeted, quote, "We are witnessing the attempt by an American president to maintain power by overturning a fair election. We are seeing the persecution of public officials for the crime of doing their evident duty. And we are seeing most GOP legislators become bystanders or cheerleaders during a frontal attack on American ideals. It's a good thing we're wearing masks because the stench of GOP hypocrisy is overwhelming. Elected Republicans who speak of patriotism can't be bothered to speak up for American traditions, beliefs, and institutions. Those who frown but say nothing are especially disgraceful. Knowing better does not exculpate it, it incriminates. Their conscience has ceased to be a guide and become an accomplice. At some point, patience with inequity becomes complicity. We are not asking much of elected Republicans. The fear of being targeted by a presidential tweet and gaining a primary opponent is real enough. But it is hardly the risk of a young soldier on D-Day or a protester at a segregated lunch counter. I, like many Republican members of Congress, but those who sacrifice their ideals to the ambitions and insecurities of a single corrupt ruler have ceased to serve the country. Their failure to defend democracy at this moment of testing can't be excused and won't be forgiven." Now, Michael Gerson is really an amazing person, and he's somebody I differ with politically pretty much most of the time. But for him to come out and say this, and especially in the Washington Post, knowing fully well that Donald Trump is reading, at least online reading the op-ed, is amazing. Now, with elected representatives, because I believe in many of them, because I know they can be better. Losing a public office ultimately is a small matter in the soul's long adventure, and losing office in a just cause is one of history's honors. He then asked them to remember who they are. So that concludes pretty much what the gist of what he's saying there is, unfortunately, what's happened over the past nearly 3 weeks now, 3 weeks from tomorrow, the election happened, and 16 days since President-elect Biden was declared president, is we've had the Republican Party follow hand in hand with Donald Trump, actually on their knees to Donald Trump, and have constantly refused to indict him for not conceding the election that he lost. This is what's amazing. In 2016, Hillary Clinton conceded on election night to Trump. It was the same electoral college, but she won by almost 3 million votes, and she still conceded. This idiot, this moron, the worst president in our history, continues on and on about this conspiracy theory, his crazy followers out in the street, overturn this election. It's a conspiracy. This is fraud. They haven't shown one iota of fraud, and every court in every state has turned down any protest they've had about this election. All they've done is waste taxpayers' time. And what this president has done is put more blood on his hands because he's completely ignoring the worst virus we've had since the Spanish flu of 1918. It's already killed over 250,000 people. And that's one thing I have to say about Joe Biden. And I think Joe Biden, I hope he'll be a great president. He wasn't my top choice, but bless his heart. God bless America with Joe Biden. But Biden came out just about a week ago and said, you know what? I don't think we should prosecute Donald Trump. Are you out of your mind, future President Biden? Because this man has destroyed our country. He sold us out to Russia. The Republicans in the Senate didn't convict him because they're sold out to Donald Trump and didn't even hear any witnesses. We always forget about that with all the stuff that's happened with coronavirus. I try to keep reminding people he was impeached. And then the trial went to the Senate where the Republicans hold the majority. They didn't have any witnesses. They didn't do anything. They exonerated him except for Mitt Romney on one of the two counts. And suddenly Donald Trump says he's innocent. In actuality, it was proven he's guilty as hell. So for Joe Biden to come out now, future President Biden, don't think that I'm not going to criticize when we need to criticize. Donald Trump needs to pay. His family needs to pay. And the Republican Party needs to pay for the damage he's done to this country. Back in the old days when Ronald Reagan was president, you know, Ronald Reagan was on the other side. I'm a liberal Democrat. You know, in the 80s, everybody loved Ronald Reagan. He's so patriotic. He loves America. What happened to that? How did they get this idiot, this worst president in history, to become the new Ronald Reagan when he doesn't even give a flying F about America? So that's where we are right now, folks. The president is going to, whether he concedes or not, leave office on January 20th, and we'll have a new president. Donald Trump's future is to be determined. But let me say one thing. He's facing a lot of different charges, especially in New York State. And they're not going to throw away the charges. We talked about pardons before. And he's going to pardon everybody that he can possibly pardon over the next 58 days. Probably his children, everybody who's ever worked for him. He might even do, he'll do Ivanka, he'll do Eric. He'll do Donald Jr., every assistant, anybody who's committed any crime under him is going to get pardoned. And he can do that. But according to what the ruling was about four decades ago, back when Richard Nixon resigned and Gerald Ford pardoned himself, the courts have said that a president can't pardon himself. So it remains to be seen whether that would go to the Supreme Court or not. But Trump may try to pardon himself. So that's the bad news. And it could work, actually. It probably won't. But the good news on the pardon is that it doesn't matter in the states. Because in New York State, the pardon that the president gave himself, if you suddenly find that this pardon is viable, is not honored. It's only for federal charges. So I want everybody to take a deep breath. You know, again, we're celebrating. Thanksgiving's coming up. Everybody should be with their families and as much as you can within restrictions and guidelines. Use common sense. The vaccine's coming. We're going to have a new president. 2021 is going to be a better year. There is hope for 2021. For those who've lost their lives and for those who had relatives or friends who lost their lives, for people you've lost, to the coronavirus, remember who's responsible. Okay. The Republicans and Donald Trump didn't start the coronavirus. Okay. But they've done nothing to stop it, virtually nothing. And this president now has pretty much checked out. He's not doing anything. He's on Twitter all the time. And he's just talking about how the election was corrupt. And pretty soon, nobody's going to even listen to him. Now, Melania, is she going to listen to him? I don't know. Is she going to stay with him? I really can't say, but I would guess probably not. Now, one thing we wanted to talk about before we close this particular show is the threat to national security that has happened with this transition. We talked about the transition before, if Joe Biden won the election and what would happen. The transition is a difficult time in a situation like this, because we're going from one president to another, and the president who's leaving office has decided that he's got bunker mentality, and he's just going to sit in there on Twitter all day and not have very many appearances or anything. He was at the Veterans Day ceremony in the rain at Arlington Cemetery, and that's been about it. He had a little press conference where he talked about how he was cheated out of the election, but he hasn't mentioned coronavirus. The coronavirus task force, the task force that this president put together several months ago with Mike Pence as the head, they haven't met or talked in at least 6 weeks. They're not doing anything at this point. And we are right now at a peak for the virus. We're seeing, well, today we saw 142,000 cases. Just a few days ago, we saw nearly 200,000 cases in the United States. And they're not doing anything. They're not the task force. So history is not going to treat Donald Trump well. And we can talk all night long and from here to eternity about what a pathetic president he's been. But the damage he has done to national security is, and to this country, is certainly going to be something we're going to have to look at for a long, long time. And the history books will not treat Donald Trump or Mike Pence or this administration well. Let's close tonight on a fun note. Mike Pence, we didn't hear from in the election, hardly at all. The soon-to-be former vice president, the former governor of Indiana and senator from Indiana. Pence wants to get, you know, be back in the political limelight. So I thought a couple of quotes from him as we close the show, maybe to help him in his 2024 attempt to be president. This is a vice president, soon to be former Vice President Pence. In 2002, he told CNN, "Well, I just simply believe the only truly safe sex, as the president believes, is no sex. The other part is that, frankly, condoms are a very, very poor protection against sexually transmitted diseases." That was in 2002, Vice President Pence. And my other favorite from the soon to be former Vice President Pence, who really did nothing in office, by the way. He said, the Vice President Pence said that smoking does not kill, since 2/3 of smokers do not die from smoking related illnesses. That means 1/3 of smokers do die from smoking related illnesses. And the soon to be former vice president also got a lot of money from the tobacco companies. But it's just fun to, because we're going to miss people like Vice President Pence, because it's just so much fun to hear the stupid things they say time and time again. I'm Eric Crossley. Thanks again for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. Stay safe. Wear masks. Use common sense. Hope for 2021, episode 34. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.